And we're back on the 7th edition of Will Communication. 15 days left to go on the Bali countdown. 15 days, October 9th, and we will be broadcasting Will Communication live from the jungle. Charlie's everywhere. Bali, Indonesia. Ubud. And we're here today on Will Communication in the back of Roberta's restaurant, 261 Moore Street, sitting in the Heritage Radio Network shipping container, where you can find all of the old issues of Will Communication on heritageradionetwork.com. And today, the special guest, unfortunately, is me. So we'll be talking today about dessert, because that's the thing that I know the most about. And we're going to be going over five desserts that we constructed for a magazine shoot for Apicius Magazine, which is the best food magazine in the world. www.apicius.net or .es. I'm not actually sure, but I'm sure that our incredible production and engineering team, Lorenzo and Nat the engineer, will be able to put up the correct website. And you can link to the Apicius, that's A-P-I-C-I-U-S, website, the best food magazine in the world, which I discovered for the first time about 5 years ago in the laboratory at El Bulli in Spain, with the preview of the first issue. I've already broken my two rules that I've learned about radio, and I've used three times in the first 30 to 45 seconds. But when I was in the laboratory at El Bulli with Ferran and Albert, we were reviewing the first issue of this new magazine called Apicius, and it was like the most beautiful thing in the world. Probably the most beautiful food magazine that's ever been made, with the possible exception of OptArt, for those of you who are Swiss art and food fanatics. And I know there are many, many of you, of the thousands listening and the millions worldwide who tune in every week at 4:30 here on Heritage Radio Network to listen to Will Communication. So we were looking at the magazine, which of course was featuring Albert and Ferran Adria of El Bulli, where I had the pleasure to work in 1999. And I used to go back every couple of years to the creative center just whenever I was feeling bored or miserable or in a rundown shanty town like Philadelphia or backwaters of Maine or just some horrible place like New Jersey. I managed to go back to Barcelona every couple of years to sort of refresh and regroup. So this magazine, about 5 years later, no, 3 or 4 years later, when it was in its third year, the editors called me and said, you know, the question that you're always waiting for, would you like to sell our magazine? And I said, no, I don't want to sell your magazine, but I'd be happy to be in your magazine. And then they said, well, who the hell are you? And is there anything that you do that's very good? And I said, well, why don't you send somebody over and we'll check it out and we'll look into it and see if we can produce something great for you. So Apicius actually did send somebody over to Room for Dessert. They sent back word to the mothership that it was acceptable. And then the next thing that I know, we were in Milan shooting. So 2 years later, I called Apicius and said, well, do you want to do a book? Because Montagut Editors, who's the parent company of Apicius, is responsible for the most beautiful pastry books in the world. And they said, well, maybe, but at least we'll consider doing another photo shoot. So for this photo shoot, at the time, I wasn't working at Room for Dessert anymore. I was working at a horrible shanty town in Union Square area. And I wasn't making anything interesting. So I said, I need to figure out what I'm going to make. So the result was this design of these five concepts, which we're going to go into today, and the five resulting desserts. And I think we'll probably be really testing the limits and the boundaries of radio to whether I can communicate these things in any way effectively. And don't forget, you can always, if what I'm saying doesn't make any sense at all, which it may or may not, you can feel free to call in at 718-497-2128. Remember, that's 718-497-2128. Usually we have a trivia question on Will Communication, but today we're actually just going to offer a 24-ounce Modelo to the first person who calls in. We're just actually bribing you to call into the station. So I'm here right now. You've got about an hour to claim your beer. But let's get back to the shoot and what was going on. So what I'd like to talk about today is sort of the creative process that goes into making desserts and then the actual desserts that result from coming out of them. So I think we've set the stage. I think we've set the stage for why these desserts were made for Apicius Magazine. And I think actually the most appropriate thing to do would be to take a short break right now, ruin my segment strategy, and then roll back in and talk about the reasons behind each of these desserts. On Will Communication, Season 6, Issue 5, Volume 3, with yet another music selection produced by my crack production team, Lorenzo and Nat the Engineer.
Thanks.
Nat the Engineer. I've always wanted to have somebody that I can refer to as the Engineer, even if it's totally, even if it has no basis in reality. I just would always wanted to have an engineer that I could refer to. So, Nat, I thank you for being that engineer. And I've been told that we now have a new technology upgrade here at Heritage Radio Network.
We do.
Where there's a sound coming from the other room. I don't know what that is, but I think it's Nat the engineer.
It is.
We have actually, it's pretty incredible. So I don't want to be totally thrown off tangent again, because we're on my favorite subject here on Will Communication, which is my opinion about everything. And one of the things we're going to talk about today, we're talking about an Apicius photo shoot, and we're going to see if we can pull off the impossible and actually use radio for what it was originally intended to do, and that's describe something and have people imagine what it is without having pictures to go along with it. So this used to be the way that all communication was, probably only 50 years ago. But unfortunately, things in the world have progressed, and now we have TV and like iPods or all sorts of technology that I don't really understand, but that I have piles and piles of at my home. So what we're here on Will Communication at Roberta's on Heritage Radio Network, and we're fortunately sponsored today by TechServe, your one-stop shop for all things Mac, which is my personal favorite place to go whenever I have an issue with my Mac, rather than waiting online at the ridiculous Apple showrooms all over Manhattan. The service is incredible, and the chairs are incredibly comfortable. So we're going to talk about the 14 chambers of dessert, which is obvious to anybody who's been listening to the show for 6 weeks, is the foundation for the Apicius photo shoot of to-go desserts, which I made about a year ago, and is about to be published. Well, it has been published, but the American production person is slow as can be. So it actually is unavailable in English yet, unless you live in England, where they also speak English. But we're gonna have the images available as soon as the magazine is released. But you'll be in the meantime, as the website we gave you before, which is apicius.es, you'll be able to go and see some of the extra special packagey content that they put together online, which probably has extra pictures of me, which is, you know, what everybody that listens to this show wants to find out. So the important thing is that I was writing the content for this show while I was in the hospital, because I had taken about 6 months to, I delayed for about 6 months doing any of the work that explained what the reasons were behind the desserts that I'd made. So I was lying on my back in a hospital bed for about a week, although I know all of you listening are very concerned with my personal health, but I'm totally fine right now. Nothing is contagious. And we have, so I was writing and I was sitting there and I was thinking about x-rays and radiation and all the fun things that you think about when you're in the hospital. So I'd come up with, and I always like to have a funny name for everything that I do. So we came up with the name Radioleg 14, just because I thought it was funny and it related to the 14 chambers of pastry, which I had actually scribbled on a napkin while I was in a meeting with the editors of Apicius, and I still have that napkin, or at least I have a photocopy of that napkin. So the 14 chambers of dessert, or the whatever the right way to call it is horoscope, taste, aesthetic, philosophy, purpose, creativity. Sorry, I'm flipping the pages because I can't remember. Technique, history, organization, economy, and very appropriate for our show today, communication, design, and experience, and emotion. So those are a lot of things that are sort of very, very loaded words. And I'm going to try to give a quick maybe introduction to all those topics before we segue into talking about the actual desserts that were a result of this work. So the first concept is the horoscope. And I've always been fascinated by the horoscope because there's, you know, 5 billion people in the world, and there's only 12 horoscopes because there's only one every month. So that means that like a half a billion people, the horoscope has to work for them every day. So I always thought that was awesome, because still everybody buys the friggin' newspaper to see what the horoscope is, but it has to be right for half a billion people. So that's pretty awesome, like to have that kind of a phenomenon. Like, it's more than organized religion to have this kind of a phenomenon where everybody has to know what you're talking about. So that sort of was my role, my model, when I wanted to make a dessert menu, which was, if I could learn enough about the people that wanted to come in and I could make 12 desserts, then, and each one, half a billion people would think was made especially for them, then I would have the perfect dessert menu. Because everybody that walked into the restaurant would say that this was made especially for them. So that's sort of like the holy grail, I think, about making somebody feel special and making somebody feel like what you made is especially for them. Which, incidentally, here at Roberta's is how everybody feels, because the pizza is actually made especially for them. Now, taste is the next thing to talk about, and taste is sort of very obvious in the sense that we're talking about food. However, it's not something to be taken for granted, and I think it's sort of the distinction between food that you eat for nourishment, like calories, or when you choose to spend more than $2 on a meal by going to a place where you value the flavors that the kitchen and the products are generating. So again, I think Roberta's is another great example. When we're sitting here and you've got herbs growing on the roof and you've got people preparing the food that are very tasty, it reminds you why you choose to go here as opposed to the deli on the corner, even though there are a lot of really cool people that hang outside the deli on the corner with really cool fashions, very nice hair, excellent shoes, and great jeans. But again, if you live in Bushwick already, you know how to dress and you know how to do your hair, so you don't necessarily need to go there. But for people like me who live in the outer boroughs of Manhattan, we need to come sometimes to Bushwick to get a little perspective and a little bit of fashion sense. So next, speaking of fashion sense, and again, being in Bushwick, which is, I think it's fair to say, is with Paris and London and Milan and Tokyo as the fashion capital of the world, it's appropriate to talk about aesthetic. So aesthetic, which is for me the personal vision of the chef and the interpretation of beauty, is a sort of really important thing towards making a good dessert, or making a good dessert menu, or making any kind of food. And I think it's really important to have that the person who makes your food actually has a reason for doing it, and is able to communicate that through the items that they prepare. So next, speaking about reason, you know, leads, unfortunately setting myself up Because unlike when you have a guest, you're able to just lead yourself through the presentation very, very easily by setting yourself up. So speaking about the reason and leading into philosophy, which would be the next chamber of communication, I worked with a chef in Italy who, when we were in Spain together, and he said, why do I need to worry about techniques? Why is it so important to be obsessed with new techniques? Because I can always pay somebody who knows more than me to show me how to do them. But what I can't pay somebody for is a philosophy that underlines my work. And so if I can come up with one of those every couple of years, then I consider it a good year or two. So I've always kind of taken that as my role model in terms of having a philosophy that underscores the things that I make. Next, I think something that's a sort of it's distinct from philosophy, but that's purpose. And I think purpose is a little bit more specific to the actual intent of the individual item that's being prepared, as opposed to the overall philosophy that sort of underlies everything. Next, creativity. Again, a hyper-loaded word that I really think is appropriate. And I've always used the pornography statute of creativity, which is I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it. And I think that anyone's personal interpretation of creativity is perfectly fine, but that the need to make something new is something that should be motivating you when you're preparing food, because it really helps to make things distinctive and it helps to provide people with an excellent experience. And it also satisfies, in this case, me, which is, again, on-will communication, the most important thing. So the next thing that I'd like to talk about briefly is technique. And I think we're sort of moving through at an appropriate pace right now, finally, settling in. Technique is sort of a flavor delivery system. And being able to prepare food well and understand how things are made is really, really important to making dessert, even more so than to traditional or savory cooking. And I think one of the things we've talked about here at Will Communication on Heritage Radio Network here in the backyard of Roberta's is that there is a difference. You know, buying good ingredients is not cooking. That's shopping. And that in America, we've had this phenomenon where sort of Julia Child as French technique has been replaced by Alice Waters and California market cooking. And this just doesn't do justice to the hundreds and hundreds of years of people that have been cooking around the world and trying to refine their technique. So I think that actually understanding technique, in addition to having the best ingredients in the world, is very, very important. And again, setting myself up perfectly, which I'd like to compliment myself on setting myself up so well. History is a very important thing, and we're all very young and very modern, especially in the trendiest borough or the trendiest part of the trendiest borough in the world. We're very sensitive sometimes to current trends, and we may not always remember history. So the history of the people that have come before us, I think, are really important, and whatever it is that you do. And in dessert, it's really important to know that you might want to be creative, but at the same time, it's important to think about like understanding the role of where you are in the history of things that are being created and paying attention to that and being knowledgeable about what people have done before you and being respectful as well. So I'm going to zip through a little bit the next half a dozen items because I don't think they require necessarily the same amount of attention as the first half dozen because they're slightly more, they're more boring, basically. Organization, which to me is the most important thing in terms of being organized, whether that's keeping your towels folded or your silverware put away or your station clean or your notes or your recipes properly maintained. I've found organization to be the most important thing when starting to do anything. Economy, again, a subject that we've touched on here on Will Communication, speaking with Alex from Chiquito, talking about how unsustainable it has become to be supporting sustainability because the farms that have become celebrity farmers are now gouging the chefs who have built them up. So for the Will Communication crowd, I know this is a very sensitive subject, and the dozens of you that are at home right now just listening to this show, I'm sure that it's important to you to think about how to manage your money when you're in the kitchen. Communication, I think we can just leave it at that since it's the name of our show. Design, this is going to lead us, I think, very, very well into where we're going next when we're actually talking about dessert design. But actual design, graphic design, industrial design, and experience design is totally central to everything that I make, and hopefully it's going to allow me to communicate these desserts over the radio. So the last thing to mention is emotion, and I think emotion pretty much speaks for itself. But you can hear in my voice, I'm sure, that there's no way that any of these things can be made without the passion of the person that's making it. So when we come back on Will Communication here on Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's, brought to you by TechServe, we're going to be talking about five desserts and what the hell is going on in them. Here on Will Communication, Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our previous Will Communication episodes from season 1 through 8 here on heritageradionetwork.com in the archives, thanks to the hard work of Lorenzo, my producer, and Nat the Engineer. Nat the Engineer, if you're still able to work the mic, I'm sure the audience would love to hear from you.
Hello.
Nat the Engineer, very, very shy, but not to be outdone, never bested by an engineer I've ever worked with in my long history of radio.
Thank you.
Best engineer in the world, Nat, the engineer.
I get that a lot.
I would imagine you have a very enthusiastic audience here in the shipping container in the backyard of Roberta's Restaurant here in Bushwick, Brooklyn, the fashion capital of the world, just off the L stop. That's the Morgan stop on the L train. For those of you, that's the train. It also goes to Manhattan, the other direction from Brooklyn, in case you're looking to do some shopping or you need any electronics equipment. For example, you could take the L train to Union Square and then hop over to our sponsor, TechServe, at 23rd between 6th and 7th, your one-stop shop for all things Mac. So we're here on Will Communication, and we've been talking about how things get made and sort of what are the reasons that I go to work every day to make dessert. And now we're going to try to do the impossible, which is to serve the food, so to speak, by describing what it is over the radio. So in a heretofore unknown thing, we're looking to go into the future and explain things without images. So the first dessert that we're going to talk about is the now famous 10 Years of Solitude dessert. So if you've ever ridden Gabriel Garcia Marquez, who had 100 years of solitude, but he was a very, very great writer, and I think he won a very big award. I'm sure he won a huge prize for something. But I only had 10 years of solitude because I wasn't quite at the same level of Gabriel Garcia Marquez, and I'd also only been cooking for 10 years. So this dessert is actually a huge... All of the desserts we're talking about were designed to be eaten family style. So they're all 14 inches long by 4 inches wide by 4 inches high. So they're absolutely enormous desserts. So if you can visualize a 14-inch long meringue, so instead of a big bumpy meringue, we made a flat sheet of a meringue, and we used it to make a kind of a millefeuille. So I can assure you that there's no way that I'll be able to communicate these things in the amount of time I've allotted myself, so I think we're just going to let it ride for now. The 10 years of solitude, I spoke with my industrial designer friend Brian, who built me a stencil, actually, and again, sort of incorporating the industrial design into what we're doing, and we used cocoa powder to stencil the words 10 years of solitude onto the top of a 14-inch long meringue. And I think we used a stencil that actually looks like the font stencil. So I don't know, I thought it was funny, but it's certainly appropriate or easy to visualize for the thousands of listeners in Brooklyn and all of my fans worldwide. If you're trying to imagine this dessert before it's released in Apicius on apicius.es, you can start with the 14-inch long meringue and the cocoa stencil of 10 years of solitude. We then wanted to make a millefeuille, like a classic, I don't know what the word is in English, actually, but it means a thousand leaves. But I guess we call it, I don't know what we call it in this country, and actually nobody knows what we call it in this country, because there's no... Nat the engineer, do you know what a millefeuille is called in this country?
No, I don't.
See, well, does somebody have the Google machine on the internet?
Googling as we speak.
All right, I don't know what the English word is, but it sometimes we've as with after World War II, we've taken a lot of things from France. So I went to the Union Square Green Market and bought some buckwheat honey, and I made a classic sabayon, and then which is pouring the cooked honey over egg yolks and whipping the hell out of them, and then folding in whipped cream, and then piping it out just as you would in a classic millefeuille. Or as we're looking in, my crack engineering team is looking into right now, finding out what that's actually called. We then made a flexible granite of raspberries, because there were raspberries at the market. And for those of you who don't know what a flexible granite is, I will tell you that nobody knew what a flexible granite was until we decided to make one for this dessert. So we took a raspberry puree and we pureed it with sugar, and then we mixed it with Ultratex 8, which is a modified tapioca starch that incidentally you can find on my website, which is www.willpowder.com. That's will powder, not willpower, which I think you get the, everybody gets it. It's idiot proof. I have an idiot proof slogan and logo. So we've got flexible granite of raspberry, which is mixed with the modified tapioca starch. So you can actually spread a sheet of ice and then pick it up and it's like flexible, like rubber or elastic. Fresh almonds, because they were available, and for those of you who haven't had fresh almonds, those are the amazing green fuzzy things that you find, and when you break it open there's a little white thing inside, and that little white thing has a little clear thing inside of it, which is like an almond jelly. So the little clear almond jelly, mint leaves, and curry powder, which incidentally is also available on willpowder.com, because I always like to promote myself whenever I'm making desserts, because that's the only way that I'm able to make any money. So the first dessert, the 10 years of solitude, cocoa stencil, 14-inch long meringue, honey sabayon, raspberry granite, fresh almonds, mint, and curry.
And for the record, millefeuille, a Napoleon or custard slice.
A Napoleon, you know, I think that's total nonsense. And I'm seeing... Well, I'm not going to describe who I'm seeing walking by right now, but I can assure you it was a vision. So again, moving along in our attempt to reintroduce radio as the vision of the future, we're going to talk about the next dessert after the 10 years of solitude, which is, the French names are just too pretentious. So we're just going to call it youthfulness, which is obviously not a pretentious name for a dessert. And this dessert was modeled after a puzzle that a child would put together. So there was about 14 or 15 things, which were basically picked by colors. And the dessert was designed to an overlay of a stencil of the archipelago of Indonesia, which is obviously where I'm going on October 9th. So there's really no other way to make a archipelago of Indonesia into a cake unless you have the appropriate coloring. So we took a 14-inch by 4-inch cake, a sponge cake that we made with olive oil and yogurt, cut it into a 4x14 band, like a bar that you might use to build a tiki bar, for example, if you were here in the backyard of Roberta's. And then we dyed it purple with a mix of with pure Concord grape juice, which, or if I had the wherewithal, I'd be doing it with the Lambrusco, similar to the Otello Lambrusco by Cechi, which I'm enjoying right now while hosting this show here on Will Communication at Roberta's Radio Network, heritageradionetwork.com. And so the Indonesian archipelago was made out of a black sesame sablé, which is a sandy type cookie, which turned gray. We cut out the shapes of all the different islands, and then we made a topographical map on that with different powders and mousses and creams and flower petals. And I think in this case, we made marshmallows out of mango and hibiscus, jelly of rose water and coconut powder, praline powder, and all the kind of things that a child would use to play with. And that was sort of the idea of making a dessert that was actually an experience for somebody to do. So I think my instinct is that if we go through all five desserts, we're going to be here until Will Communication Season 9, which is, so I think what we're going to do is I think the third dessert is going to be enough to communicate everything about everything that's important to me and therefore to you, since my audience, this is the only thing that you've been doing all day, staying home in your underwear watching TV and waiting for Will Communication to be on at 4:30 every Thursday afternoon, Heritage Radio Network. So here we have the next dessert, the last dessert that we're going to talk about today, the one I'm going to send you off with, which I think is very, very appropriate because we're here at Roberta's, where I think pizza was invented. We've been in the birthplace of pizza here. And I think I was speaking with Chris, who is the owner of Roberta's, one of the two owners. And as all of you Will Communication listeners will know, Brandon, who's the other owner, who was one of our guests, he was the whole guest, actually, about 2 weeks ago, and we were funneling beer live on air. So we're now here in the... I'm not sure if... I need a laugh button. Do we have Nat the Engineer? Do we have a laugh button?
Ha 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 ha.
See, that's, for those of you who don't know Nat, he's a droll man, but he's hysterically funny. And that's his actual laugh. So if I can have that button, or otherwise I'm just going to have to refer every time, we'll be able to just automatically laugh. So when I came to Roberta's, it reminded me of being in Europe, or Italy more precisely, because the rest of Europe, you know, has its flaws. Whereas most of the things in Italy are pretty close to perfect. And I was visiting a friend of mine who's a chef in Turin, or actually outside Turin, and he took us to this pizzeria called Cristina. And Cristina is this old, old lady who, like, I don't think she can see. I mean, she looks blind. She's very close to blind if she's not actually blind. But she has two guys that just hand her stuff and one guy that takes it away. So she just makes pizza all night long, and she makes the best pizza that I've ever had. Like, for me, the perfect pizza, which is absolutely just plain dough cooked in a 1,000-degree oven, so it totally souffles up, and when it comes out, topped with ice-cold burrata, arugula, and olive oil and salt. So for those of you who frequent Roberta's, you might recognize a similar cousin of this pizza as the white and green pizza, which I ate on my way into the studio today. But there's something about this pizza where the dough is just on fire and the burrata is ice-cold, and this old lady's making it for you, and she can't really see, and you know, she doesn't really know where her fingers are going, but the pizza's coming out the right shape. So I always had the aspiration to do something like that was that awesome. So we had the chance to, and at the same time, I'm a huge soccer fan. So, and fortunately for me, Italians have a great way of naming their soccer things in a way that I find to be really funny, like the Sox League, or the La Lega Calcio, which is the soccer league, is actually the Sox League, which is absolutely, I think that's hilarious. We don't have anything nearly as well named in this country. So, and in Italy, in the top goal scorer of Serie A every year is known as the capocannoniere, or the top gun, which again, for anybody who's alive, obviously Top Gun, one of the greatest movies of all time, Kelly McGillis's grittiest role since Witness, and a young Tom Cruise riding off into the sunset. Pretty awesome. So the Top Gun pizza, I thought, was a great idea. And coincidentally, the year, the Turin is home to a very famous team called Juventus. And Juventus, incidentally, was demoted to Serie B for cheating. Actually, they were paying the referees and the other players to lose so that they would keep winning, and they got caught. And most of their executive staff tried to kill themselves, and then they were demoted to the second division. So this is this great story of talent lost. And then there were the few guys who chose not to leave the team when they got demoted, stayed, and won promotion back to Serie A the next year. And their first year back, the two top goal scorers in Serie A were Alex Del Piero and David Trezeguet, both of Juventus. So in this sense, the pizza was dedicated to Juventus of Turin and their rise back from a catastrophic fall from the heights of the world to the depths of the world, which is similar to the path that I'm trying to chart for myself. So my friend Brian Sullivan took a Domino's pizza box, and he actually silkscreened, he made a sticker of Juventus crest. So we made a Juventus pizza box with the crest of Juventus, which is black and white, three stripes. I'm sure it's a fancy lion, probably looks like a Ferrari logo or Maserati, which is pretty much every logo in Italy, whether it's Ferrari or Lamborghini. They all actually have the same logo. It's usually a tiger with its hands in the air. Sometimes it's a lion. And then we made a pizza. So we wanted to make something as simple and as beautiful as the pizza from Christina's. So we actually made pizza dough, put it in the oven to souffle. We took fresh burrata, which we found at Murray's Cheese over on Bleecker Street in the West Village in the other borough of New York. Fresh micro arugula, which we bought from Uno Farms at Union Square. Olive oil from Liguria. Smoked salt, also available at willpowder.com. And then we did a Trezeguet garnish of shaved strawberries that were marinated with a little bit of orange zest, and made a white chocolate mousse with creme fraiche, or sour cream, as I believe it's known in America, but it's not quite the same thing. So our Juventus pizza box, in honor of Christina, white pizza, burrata, white chocolate, arugula, strawberries, orange zest, olive oil, and salt, I think was the perfect sort of harmony of pop art, dedication to design, and flavor, reason, purpose, and storytelling, which I hope is what we can leave you here with today on the never-ending Will Communication 9, Season 3, Volume 5, here at Roberta's, Heritage Radio Network, heritageradionetwork.com. Thanks to TechServe, Lorenzo, and Nat the Engineer.